All right, so we're going to finish up Colossians today. And if you have your Bibles, we're going to be reading Colossians 4, verses 7 to 18. So I guess I'll just read it. Okay, so Colossians 4, and then 7 to 18. All right, so it says, verse 7, "All my state shall Tychicus declare unto you, who is a beloved brother and a faithful minister and fellow servant in the Lord, whom I have sent unto you for the same purpose, that he might know your estate and comfort your hearts. With Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother, who is one of you, they shall make known unto you all things which are done here. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, saluteth you, and Marcus, sister's son to Barnabas, touching whom you received commandments, if he come to you, receive him. And Jesus, which is called Justice, who are of the circumcision, these only are my fellow workers unto the kingdom of God, which have been a comfort unto me. Epaphras, who is one of you, a servant of Christ, saluteth you, always laboring fervently for you in prayers, that you may stand perfect and complete in all the will of God. For I bear him record that he hath a great zeal for you, and them that are in Laodicea, and them in Hierapolis. Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greet you. Saluteth the brethren which are in Laodicea and Nymphis, and the church which is in his house. And when this epistle is read among you, cause that it be read also in the church of the Laodiceans, and that ye likewise read the epistle from Laodicea. And say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry which thou hast received in the Lord, that thou fulfill it. A salutation by the hand of me, Paul. Remember my bonds. Grace be unto you. Amen." Okay. So, you know, today's theme is basically, it's friendship. And as you can kind of see here, you know, Paul is just, you know, saying thank you to all of his friends along the way. And just wanted to throw a question out there that, you know, I sent in the email. You know, what are the characteristics of a true friend? Does anyone have, have any thoughts on what characteristics a true friend would have? Yeah? Okay, cool, yeah.
So
I keep trust. Okay, good. Anyone else? All right, yeah, those are great. You know, when I thought of, you know, what a true friend, you know, what characteristics they have, I thought, you know, someone that even though you have, like, no popularity or no fame or money, you know, they're still willing to spend time with you. Another thing is, I think, you know, true friends that you can fight, but, you know, you still move on and forgive each other. I think, you know, true friendship also means having mutual respect for each other. You know, understanding that you guys aren't going to always agree, but you can respect each other's decisions and opinions. Another thing is maybe you're, you know, willing to drop everything that you're doing and be with your friend when they need you. And also I think a true friend kind of, it's, you know, they're truthful. They speak the truth even when it hurts. Even, you know, when you don't want to hear something, they'll tell you the truth. And, you know, sometimes we kind of need that just to motivate us. So in verses, you know, 7 to 18, we really just see Paul ending his letter with greetings and thanks. And for me, it was interesting because, you know, Colossians is not really long. It's only 4 chapters. But you notice that he almost spends the entire 4th chapter giving thanks to these people that mean a lot to him. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, what does this say about Paul that he's willing to, you know, dedicate a whole chapter to, you know, to these friends of his? The first thing that I thought of was that he actually had friends. You know, when you kind of think about it, you kind of take it for granted. But, you know, in order to have friends, you need to have a certain personality, you know, a likable personality. And you can kind of see in Paul's writing that he was caring, that he was honest, and sometimes he was brutally honest, you know. And, you know, I think we kind of take for granted that, you know, friendship is, you know, it's somewhat easily obtainable. But when you kind of think of Paul's situation, you know, he was constantly traveling. He was in prison a lot, right? And he was persecuted. So for someone to, you know, have a reputation of, you know, being kind of hated and persecuted in prison and to have friends, you know, that's kind of odd in today's society. Because we would sort of shun, you know, all the prisoners, anyone with a bad reputation. And you know, if you have friends that are constantly getting in trouble, you know, you probably wouldn't be spending a lot of time with them. But you know, here you can see Paul had a list of people that, despite the fact that he was in prison and kind of, you know, running from the law sometimes, that he was still liked. Another thing these verses kind of showed me was that he was humble and he wanted to acknowledge the people that were really helping him. I think, you know, he just wanted to make sure that he was, I guess, trying to be a team player, right? Because a lot of these people were helping him start up the churches or run the churches that he established. And you know, since Paul can be everywhere at once, he just giving thanks to the people that were helping him out run the church. And the third thing that this showed me was that his friends were on his mind. Because I think I was reading that he might have written this letter while he was in prison. So obviously, you know, he cared about these people and he wanted to show them that, you know, they were definitely just thinking about them. So I don't know if you've ever seen the movie About a Boy. One of the quotes that, you know, I always loved was, you know, "No man is an island." If you've never seen that movie, it's basically just meaning that we can't do things alone, right? We need other people in our lives. We rely on other people for help. You know, in a personal standpoint, that I, you know, I started my job back in July, and I spent 2 months in Virginia. And so, you know, 2 months is—it's not a long time, but it's a long time when you, you know, have to start all over in a new place. You don't know anyone. You don't know the city. And so it was, you know, for me it was pretty hard to start all over. You know, I didn't know anybody. I had to make new friends there, and it was hard because, you know, the people there are definitely different. A lot of the people I hung out with, I don't think they were Christian. You know, they didn't have the same, the same morals as I did. You know, a lot of them would party, go out drinking, and whatnot. And a lot of times I would just stay back in my apartment, and not do that kind of stuff. And it's hard because when you do that, you know, you're basically being a social outcast, and you know, they kind of look down on you. I knew they didn't, you know, like me particularly, but you know, I stayed back and just watched TV, just go on the internet, just do whatever. I kept a lot of contact with people here back in the city and my family. So in a way, you know, I was sort of like an island, right? I was basically isolating myself, sometimes on purpose, sometimes not on purpose. You know, if they didn't want me around, nothing I can do about it. But, you know, it was definitely tough, but I knew that, you know, I'll be able to come back to San Francisco in 2 months, that I would, you know, have my support system back. I would have, you know, this church and my family back here. So yeah, definitely in Virginia, I didn't have a lot of Christians around me that would respect my decisions or even understand them, because, you know, for them, all they know is drinking and partying, and, you know, for me, that's, you know, that's not really what I want to surround myself with. But it was definitely a wake-up call that I needed people in my life that were like me, you know, that understood me. And, I mean, that's basically what the saying, "No man is an island," is about, right? We need people in our lives. And so, you know, back to these verses, I think this is just Paul acknowledging his support system, you know, saying that, just thanking the people that would like him, that would understand him, and accept him for, you know, who he was. And these are people that sort of complimented him, right? I think that's what friendship is about. It's about finding people that kind of compliment you and to just make you better, you know. You know, to look at some of these people in these verses, he names about, I think it was 9 people, that they're all kind of like different pieces to the puzzle for him, right? They all compliment him and help him in different ways. I think that's what, you know, for friendship, you know, we have different friends for our different needs, right? When we have to talk about work, we usually go to our work friends, or school, we, you know, go to our school friends. You know, if we need computer help, we talk to people who know computers, right? So we have different needs, and Paul had different needs here. In verse 7, he talks about, I think his name's Tychicus. You know, just reading the study book, you know, it kind of goes into, if you read it, you know, it goes into different people and how they help in different ways. I think Tychicus was, he sort of, I think Paul saw him as an equal, and I see him as sort of like Mr. Reliable, right? He's the friend that Paul could trust. Paul gave him the letter so that he can give to the Colossians. And also he was the guy that would answer questions about, Paul in prison. So this was definitely someone that he could trust. And, it says a lot about their relationship, right? That Paul had this guy in his life that he could be good friends with, that he could really rely on. And, Tychicus was willing to travel and give this letter to the Colossians. And, a lot of us, we have trouble just, doing simple errands, right? And, to have a friend like this was, sort of like Mr. Reliable, just someone that Paul could trust. In verse 9, he starts talking about Onesimus, and I guess he traveled with Tychicus, and the study guide said that he was a runaway slave of Philemon, which was, is another letter later in the Bible. So, since Onesimus was a runaway slave, and I think we kind of associate runaways with being rebellious or rule breakers, and the difference here is that Paul actually praises him. So, something must have happened between the time that he ran away and the time that Paul wrote this. I kind of view Onesimus as sort of like Mr. Potential, someone that we look at maybe on the outside, we kind of see, he's kind of trouble, we can't trust him, but deep down, there's something more, to him. Like, when I think about, potential, I actually thought about Tom Brady, right? Tom Brady was a 6th-round pick, all the teams in the NFL passed on him 5 times in a row. But, the Patriots, they saw something in him. They took a chance on him, and, now it's paying off. Also, Joe Montana, 3rd-round pick. There's potential in certain people. And I guess Paul saw potential in this runaway slave. And I started thinking about, in terms of potential in people in our lives, and I thought about the kids at math camp. If you've ever been at math camp or if you've taught at math camp, you know that sometimes there's a lot of troublemakers. I know Shirley always talks about Roger, right? I guess Roger was a troublemaker when he was a kid, and now I guess he's better, right? So in math camp, I guess this past year, I had some kids sort of abuse me, I guess. They would tie my shoelaces together, they would call me names, they'd throw stuff at me. And this one time, one kid at math camp, she was doing this to me, and she actually asked me, why aren't you getting mad? Why aren't you doing anything back? And the reason is because I saw potential in her. I'm not going to yell at her. I know that kids will be kids, and also that there was something different about her, that I saw some potential. And the reason I knew she had potential is because 5 minutes later, she untied my shoelaces that were tied up, no kids really do that. So she actually, she goes to Chinese school here, and I think that's what Paul was trying to get to with Onesimus, that he had potential, that a lot of the friends that we have, we should stick with them because, in the long run, it's going to pay off. He goes on to mention Aristarchus in verse 10. So, according to the study guide, he was actually a prisoner with Paul at Rome. He was also shipwrecked with Paul. So, this was someone that Paul shared a lot of memories with. And, I thought, that's someone that maybe we've gone to school for a long time with, or that, that we've known a lot. I actually had someone at Berkeley. I told you, I had 8 classes with him in my 2 years at Berkeley. So our memories of college are going to be pretty similar because we shared the same classes. And I think that's what Paul's feeling here too, is that he's built this friendship with Aristarchus through their experiences of hardship. He goes on to mention Mark in verses 10 and 11. And I guess Mark and Paul were friends during Paul's missionary journey, and at one point they have a disagreement and then they split up, and you don't hear about Mark again until here. So you know, I think in this case, you know, Mark kind of represents the people that we sort of give up on, but we can sort of make up, you know, mend everything and be friends again. And, you know, he's kind of like the guy that you can yell at, you can argue with, and you don't always agree with, but you can kind of overcome your pride and become friends again. And, you know, I've done that in my life too. You know, I've had, you know, a lot of fights. I've forgiven. I've been forgiven, and we kind of move on. I think that's what Mark represents here. It's someone that Paul really had trouble with, but in the end, they become really good friends again. Verse 11, he also mentions Jesus or justice. He doesn't really go into it too much. But in verse 12, he mentions Epaphras. And I think Epaphras was actually the pastor for the Colossian church. And, you know, Paul mentions him here because I think it's almost like Epaphras is sort of an extension of Paul, right? You know, Paul can't be at the church, but, you know, Epaphras represents him. He's standing for what Paul believes. And for me, when I read about Epaphras, it's kind of like our pastors here, right? It's, you know, Paul's praying for Epaphras, and I guess we should be praying for our pastors too, right? So that they lead us, that they build a strong foundation for us that we can kind of keep building on too. Verse 12, he mentions Luke. And Luke was, you know, the author of Luke, he was a physician, and he traveled with Paul during his journeys. And, you know, Paul was persecuted and imprisoned and beat up all the time. So definitely Luke was, you know, busy. And, I mean, obviously Paul has a lot to be thankful to Luke because, you know, he healed him. And I thought that Luke kind of represents, you know, kind of our friends and even, like, my mom. You know, when I'm sick, my mom's always the one that takes care of me. And I think that's what kind of Luke represents here. It's someone that we can rely on when we're sick, when we're beat up and we can't go on anymore. And, you know, a lot of times we have friends that will, you know, will call us when we're sick or bring us, like, chicken soup. Or, you know, if we miss school, they'll, you know, copy notes for us or bring us our homework. And that's what Luke represents here for Paul, I think. He goes on to mention Demas. And if you kind of read into it, you know, Paul doesn't really like him that much, but he's still thanking him. And I think later, Demas goes on to stop following God. And here, you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, Paul writes about him, mentions him, but he doesn't really like him. I think we have a lot of people like that in our lives, right? That we're kind of hopeful that they will, you know, stick with God. But at the same time, you know, in the end, it doesn't work out, right? I mean, that's just the way it goes. I mean, I've had a lot of friends that that aren't following God anymore who are really strong Christians growing up. And, you know, you just have to pray for them that maybe one day they'll turn around. The last guy he mentions is verse 17, Archippus. And I think Archippus was an officer in the Colossian church. And he was, I think he was kind of discouraged about a lot of the false teachings that were going around, that you know, Paul spends Colossians, you know, trying to justify. You know. I mean, really what I got out of this was two things. Was that Paul wants us to encourage each other, right? That he wants us to pray for each other and acknowledge each other when we need help. And, you know, I was reading my study Bible, and it gave a quote. It said, "We all need the support of each other in the work of God, and we're all supposed to build each other up." So I thought that kind of sums up what this was about. And the second point that I got out of reading these last 11, 12 verses was that we need people in our lives, right? We need Christian friends that can build us up and help us when we need them the most. And, you know, Paul is basically justifying that no man is an island, that he needed people and we needed people, and we definitely need to humble ourselves to admit that we need the help. You know, when I was going to Virginia, I thought, you know, it's 2 months, it's a good opportunity, I can do this on my own, right? I can start all over, I don't need anything, and I was completely wrong. And I'm sure that's the way, you know, Paul was feeling, was that he needed people too, and he's acknowledging them here, that he can't be everywhere at once. He can't be in all the churches that he started. He can't heal himself. He needed Luke, right? He needed all these people around him, sort of like an entourage, right? So I think the two things, just we need to encourage each other, and two, that we need to acknowledge and not be stubborn, that we need people in our lives to help us. That's basically my message. The last thing I wanted to do was I wanted to get into maybe get back into our same groups. I guess you guys can join a group. And if you can, just introduce yourselves. Just your name, anything you want to say. But really, I want to maybe try and ask for one or two things that's kind of going on for you in your lives that you would like someone else to pray for you. And I think if we have groups of, I think it was six. Maybe I was hoping that maybe today, after you guys go around and say what you would like everyone to pray for about you, that one person would just close and tonight actually just go home and pray for three of those people, and then tomorrow just pray for the other three, and that's basically it. So if you can, I guess get back into your groups, just go around, introduce yourselves, and just mention one or two things that's kind of going on in your lives right now that you'd like others to pray for.